What do you think is the best-selling vehicle of all time? Is it the Ford Model T back when there was no competition? Ford says it sold 15 million of them. But then the Volkswagen Beetle came along and sold 16 million. And depending how you count these things, Toyota changed its Corolla many times over the years, but today it says more than 50 million of them have been sold. But in terms of sheer numbers, none of these come even close to the actual best-selling vehicle of all time. But the thing is, I've never even seen one of these things before, and if you live in North America, chances are pretty good that you've never seen one either. Which is pretty amazing considering more than 500 million have been sold, and they're ubiquitous in many parts of the world. And what vehicle is this? It's a Chinese bicycle called the Flying Pigeon. Hey, I'm Tom, and this is Shifter, a channel about urban cycling, bike commuting, and the ways we get around our cities. And if you like this video, please consider subscribing or becoming a member. There are links in the description down below. So I spend way too much time thinking about bikes and riding every bike I can get my hands on. But for a long time, it's been nagging me that there's a gap in my cycling experience, and that's because I've never ridden a Flying Pigeon. I've sent lots of inquiries over the years trying to track one down, but I've never got much of a response. But I finally decided to get serious about this quest because I think the story of the Flying Pigeon is an important one. It needs to be shared. And that's because the story of the Flying Pigeon is, in a lot of ways, the story of China. The bike's rises and falls over the year really mirror what's happened in the country in the last few decades. And while the original Flying Pigeon has kind of been relegated to vintage status these days, its story really is the story of our cities, and especially about the future of our cities, and therefore the future of all of us as well. So I've been going deep into my search for a Flying Pigeon online. At first I thought I would just buy one, but I ended up with a lot of eBay listings that look like this. It looks like Flying Pigeons were exported to a lot of places for years. There's a story in Bicycling Magazine that they were easy to find at one point, even in Afghanistan. But they were never really imported on a mass scale into North America. And being in the forums, I've realized there's a bit of a pattern here. There's people who are interested, like me, in trying a Flying Pigeon, but when they get their hands on them, they say they are heavy and clunky and not that well built and not that great to ride, so they tend to be disappointed. So does this dampen my desire to try one? No, it makes me more intrigued. Why? Well, to really understand the story of the Flying Pigeon, we need to go back, not just to a time that doesn't exist anymore, but almost to a place that doesn't exist anymore. We're talking about China before the Second World War. Back in 1936, a factory opened in Tianjin that was called Chango Works. And it started churning out bicycles under the name Anchor Bicycles. Now, bicycles at this time were pretty simple and built with heavy steel, but even still, calling a bike an anchor doesn't exactly conjure up images of like gliding along peacefully, does it? They might as well have called it like the immovable boulder. But the name didn't stick. It changed a few times over the years, but then the Second World War happened, and then the Communist Revolution happened, and everything in China changed. As early as 1949, reps from the new Chinese government went to that factory and directed it to start producing a bicycle. It was intended to be sturdy, reliable, and strong, a symbol of the new China. But the pressure was on to design this bicycle, and so what did they do? Well, this was China in the mid-20th century, so somebody somewhere happened to own a vintage British rally roadster from the 1930s, and you know what came next. By the summer of 1950, that factory had geared up and started churning out production models of bicycles that looked suspiciously like that rally. I mean, if you're going to borrow design inspiration from any bike, you know, I think those British rallies were pretty good. They're a classic. Now remember, China at this time was going through a very tumultuous time. Not only were all these changes happening within the country, it was also mired deep in the Korean War. And so the bike was given a name that was meant to evoke a spirit of peace. A dove, a flying dove, a nice image, right? But somewhere along the line, either it got translated differently or someone just decided they didn't like the name. Anyway, the dove became a flying pigeon, which is fine. I kind of like pigeon better, don't you?
To start, thank you for doing this. Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Li Wei. I'm working for ITTP China office. Our work is mainly promoting sustainable transportation in China and the Asian cities.
This is Li Wei. She works for an organization called the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy. It has headquarters in New York, but Li works in Guangzhou, one of the biggest cities in China and the world. She also grew up in China in the 1980s, and she has fond memories of her parents riding her around everywhere on a bicycle.
So I talked with my parents yesterday, last night dinner, yes. And it's really a good memory for them. And it's that in 1980s, it's really a lot of bicycles on the street. But people are not rich at that time because of the economic level in China. And not many buses and cars and people can get. It's not convenient. So most of people are choosing using bicycles.
It's kind of hard to imagine today given the economic might of China, but the country in the 60s, 70s, and 80s was a much different place. The bicycle was so important that it was a key part of the country's economic reforms in the 1970s by the post-Mao leader Deng Xiaoping, who famously said that the country should have a flying pigeon in every household. By the 1980s, millions of flying pigeons were being produced, and while there were a few model styles, almost all of them were still based on that 1930s rally. Most of them were single speed, they had steel frames and full chain guards, they had rod brakes, which means the brake levers were connected to the brakes by a steel rod, and almost all of them were black. Picture a city like Beijing in the 1980s, millions of workers emerging from their homes, filling the streets with a sea of black bicycles, their kids on board and bags on boards, people are moving boxes and baskets, it's just a sea that's moving, jostling and stretching in every direction. Scenes like this were so common from China in the 1980s that this idea became part of the identity of the country. There were so many flying pigeons around those days that China was known as the bicycle kingdom.
My dad and my parents go outside for dating with bicycles, by bicycles. And I still remember when I went to the primary school, my mom riding a bicycle take me to the school.
And while millions of them were produced every year, that doesn't mean they were easy for people to come by. Getting a flying pigeon wasn't just like walking into a store and slapping your credit card down. These bikes were coveted and expensive. People would save their money for years. They would pull strings with local officials or put their names on waiting lists. And having a pigeon outside of your home was kind of like having an iPhone in the 2010s. It meant you had made it. The bicycle was also one of the big four things that Chinese aspired to own in the 70s and 80s as a sign of their success, alongside a sewing machine, a wristwatch, and a radio. And so despite their simplicity and their ubiquity, they did become a bit of a status symbol.
Before 1980s, and the bicycles is not, it's quite expensive. And if you own a bicycle and you have a relatively high society levels.
As for my search, after weeks of sending notes, I was still not having any luck finding a flying pigeon, or even I had spread my search to some of the other Chinese brands at the time, such as Phoenix, but I kept trying. Meanwhile, the era of the bicycle kingdom did not last. China's economic transformation throughout the 1990s and 2000s touched every part of society. You've probably read about the incredible urbanization in China through this time. In the 80s, less than 20% of the population lived in cities. Today, it's over 65%. We're talking hundreds of millions of people on the move. It represents probably the greatest migration of humans in history. It's pretty incredible. And this, of course, impacted the way that people moved around these cities that were growing so quickly, but it also impacted their feelings towards the way they moved around.
Up to 1980s, like in 1990s, and people are getting more monies and they decide to switch from the bicycles to the cars. And it's kind of like symbols for the wealth. The government are building more and more like the wide road for the cars. Also, the Chinese people are trying to buy the bigger cars.
As China roared into the 1990s, the flying pigeon found itself in an unexpected spot in competition with something new, the automobile. Streets that once echoed with the bells of bicycles were now rumbling with the engine of a million new automobiles. One by one, routes that once were teeming with bikes were slowly overtaken by cars. Cars were new, flashy, and expensive. They became status symbols representing the future. Bicycles, to many Chinese at this time, looked like something from the past. They were reminders of the bad old days, not the dynamic future that China was growing into. And as these cities grew at incredible rates, they also grew in ways that accommodated these new attitudes. Roads were widened to accommodate new cars. Spaces that were once dedicated to bicycles were swallowed up. Lee told me that even her parents bought an automobile during this transition, leaving their bicycle behind. By the 2000s, the flying pigeon's wings were clipped. It felt like the era of the bicycle kingdom had come to an end. So I've been spending a lot of time thinking about flying pigeons and looking for one because I really wanted to see one. I've never actually seen a flying pigeon. But after weeks and weeks of this, I'd given up ever trying to see one when a random message I had sent out on Reddit got replied to. And it turns out probably the only flying pigeon in the city is owned by a guy who is a former colleague. So I'm on my way right now Hi, Mike.
Hey, Tom. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for doing this.
No problem at all.
A real flying pigeon?
Allegedly one of two flying pigeons in Calgary, and I own both of them. So.
How did you come by this bike?
Serendipitous luck. I was driving along one day. This is quite a few years ago now. I think I've owned this thing 20 years probably now, but garage sale going on for some reason about 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. Don't know who has a garage sale then. I'm driving by and I see two vintage bikes in the driveway among the stuff they're selling. I pull up. How much? $10 each.
$10.
I was going to buy them anyway, but then I got the story of what they were. The two of them were diplomats. They were in the diplomatic corps and they had wanted a way to tour around Beijing while they were there. And I guess the way to get around Beijing is you get bicycles. So they ended up with these two bicycles and they looked mint when I saw them, but they allegedly rode them a lot. They love them. They love them so much they had to bring them back to Canada, which couldn't have been that easy back then. They brought them back. I put a bit of oil on them, put some air in the tires. These are the original tires, and then just started riding them. And I've put probably thousands of kilometers on this. Nothing's ever really gone wrong with it, which is, I think, remarkable because, you know, the reputation of flying pigeons, if you go online, is not great. But I think maybe in the 1960s, this was a government-issue bike. You can tell by the British Racing Green. Most of them were black, apparently. This one's British Racing Green. That was for the Postal Service, government workers. So maybe they made better bikes for the government in China.
But it's pretty simple, hey? Like a single speed.
Single speed.
He's got the chain guard on it.
Chain guard.
How about the brakes?
The brakes are horrendous. I can't describe them as anything but the problem you get, especially on a day like today where there's a little bit of frost in the air in Canada, they brake on these beautiful chrome rims, but they get slippery. So braking is something where you plan well ahead. Say you're going to the pub or to work or pick up your groceries. These things are great. They're sturdy. It's a very quiet bike too, which is surprising for so much metal. It doesn't rattle or anything like that. It's very smooth and...
Great. Well, let's give it a try.
Let's do it.
Let's give it a shot.
You'll see. And it has been dropped so many times that you can't hurt it. Just have fun.
You heard it here. Okay. Oh yeah. It's comfortable. Yeah, these brakes are more like...
Try an emergency stop.
Okay, we'll try it. No, there's no emergency stops.
Not at all.
So you've got to plan your stopping,
you do.
I think, ahead of time. Oh, I can get used to this. It's fun.
It's nice.
Oh, there we go. That's amazing. Thanks for showing it to me.
Hey, no problem, man.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you, dude.
So riding that flying pigeon was a ton of fun, especially after I had done so much work trying to find one, track one down. You can tell Mike really loves that bike, and I actually think he likes the story of it as much as he likes the bike, which I totally understand. One thing that surprised me about that bike after everything I read was like how gorgeous it was and how well it rode. I mean, this was not a museum piece. Mike says he rides it all the time, but it still held up really well. It seemed really well built and really solid. Could it be that this flying pigeon was actually pretty resilient? And you know what else turned out to be pretty resilient? Yep, cycling in China. Today, cycling in the country is on the rebound. It didn't take long for the country to realize that automobiles as a transportation method have their limits. There just isn't enough space for all of those cars. And while the automobile industry has become a huge part of China's economy, cities just can't accommodate it. And through her work with IDTP, Li is seeing yet another profound transformation happening in China. The country has been investing staggering amounts of money in transit projects, and all that space that was once reserved for bicycles but then given over to cars, well, some of it is starting to go back to bicycles.
So they want to have the GDP which based on the car industries, so they give more benefits to the car users. But now the government realized the sustainability is very important for the cities, and also the central government is leading the way for the green transportations, green mobilities. So the cities are doing some like kind of important work right now to give the space back to the cyclists and also pedestrians as well. It used to have the on-street parkings. They get rid of those on-street parkings and give the space back to the cycling tracks. And also even some like the car lanes. They like you used to have three car lanes. Now they have only two and give one lane for the cyclist.
And Lee says part of this transformation is that attitudes are changing as well. Those days when people look down on bicycles as hopelessly old-fashioned and low status, well, they're changing also. Young people today, she says, are embracing cycling, transit, and pedestrianism as a path to a more sustainable future.
Now, you own a car is also very costly. The parking fees are very high, and also it's very congested on the street. So the young generation prefer to choose another way, a more green one.
To accommodate this, bike lanes are being built and restored. Disincentives to drive a car are being implemented, like parking fees and zone and congestion pricing. Check out some of this footage from my friend Darcy, who visited China just last summer and posted it on his great channel, Bike Bike Nudge Nudge. Like, bike share programs are staggering in their size. In Guangzhou, where Li lives, it has 500,000 dockless bike share bikes right now. And e-bikes are a game changer as well in Li's city. 6 million e-bikes are there now. That's incredible to me. I mean, it's not always a smooth transition. Of course, there's sometimes conflict between users. And that weird line between what's a moped and what's an e-bike, well, that blurry line may be blurrier in China than anywhere else. But the government is looking at cities and trying to find ways to accommodate this. Some of the cities are actually adding bike lanes with different speeds to accommodate different types of bike users as well. And in her work, Li says she's been working with governments at different levels to ensure that transportation is being implemented in sustainable ways, using best practices based on the most up-to-date information. She sees transit, bikes, and pedestrianism as the future of Chinese cities. So what do these urban transformations in China mean for the rest of us? Well, a lot of things, I think. The urbanization in China feels very similar to what a lot of cities went through over the last 100 years, just at a faster pace, at a more compressed time frame. From the bicycle to the automobile and back again in China, it took 40 years. Doesn't it feel like a lot of cities are on the same track, just maybe a little bit slower?
I think cycling is definitely a good way for the people, not only about the economic reasons or the environment reasons, but also like for the healthy, for the people. Mm. Yeah, I'm riding a bicycle to work every day.
And as for the Flying Pigeon, well, the brand is still around, but it's evolved just like the bike culture throughout the whole country. Today, it produces all kinds of makes and models. Yes, it still produces that classic roadster, but it makes e-bikes too. And what about Li Wei's parents, the ones who rode her around on a bicycle when she was growing up, but then left that behind for a car? Well, she says that car stays parked a lot these days because they're increasingly taking transit and walking. And yes, they even bought themselves a pair of e-bikes recently. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time.